this is a very special place for me. I'm always glad to be back here, regardless of the time of year. Even in July, it's not just January that I enjoy being here, getting out of the cold in Minnesota. And I'm very appreciative this morning that someone turned on the air conditioning. We did have a problem with that one time, and mercifully, I only spoke for an hour and a half that day. So, they say that, as a speaker, you want to pay attention to your audience. And there are a couple of telltale signs I look for. If I see someone looking at the watch too much, that's a clue. But if they then look at it and shake it, then I know I've really gone on way too long. Well, I told you in January when I was here about the new terror threat level that's been added, and I predict that we will be hearing more about this as the election approaches. You may recall that that's the purple level, that's above the red level. That means bend over and kiss your butt goodbye. We hope that we will have an election in November, and that we might avoid another judicial coup. Not that I'm going to say many political things today. I mean, that would be inappropriate to talk politics from the pulpit. However, I would like to point out that a lot has changed since I was here last. Saddam Hussein was captured, and I, for one, feel a lot safer. The world, of course, is a much safer place. But frankly, I would feel even safer if John Ashcroft were locked up, too. If only to keep him from singing. Let the eagle soar indeed. And speaking of birds, you'll get the connection here in a moment. I've been following the Senate debate and then the defeat of the constitutional amendment to outlaw gay marriage. And I'm sure that straight people all over are feeling very scared now about that. So, wanting to be helpful, I called President Cheney. Well, he is the president of the Senate, you know. Well, I called and I said, I think it would make a lot more sense if we're so concerned about protecting the sanctity of marriage if we had a constitutional amendment banning divorce. Well, I can't repeat what he told me to do. I just wanted to help. Well, that's what we're here to examine today, help and helpfulness. And I remember the experience that I had as a young person, starting as a college student, working in a clothing store. And you may recall these days, those of you who are old enough, when stores had service. And sometimes it could be a little annoying when people would come up to you. But do you remember what they would generally say when they approached you in the store? May I help you? Or the less grammatically correct version, can I help you? May I help you? And we were so used to this, I mean, we just expected that someone would say this when we came in. And I remember one day I was working in the store, and a fellow came in, and we had been instructed that we should avoid using that question. We should find some other way to connect with the person and interact. And of course, that required a little more effort, but anyway, I went up to the fellow and I said to him, "Good morning, how are you?" To which he replied, "No thanks, I'm just looking." Well, helping obviously is a very important part of our daily lives. Helping is a central social process. There are many people in this room who either are or have been involved in the helping professions. Now, I look back on some of the reasons why I chose the ministry, and of course, there was the high pay and the job security, the excellent housing. There was the great retirement plan and the bonuses, and then there was the instant respect that I got from everyone. Well, that was sort of before the TV evangelists and the priests kind of messed things up. But I also became a minister because I wanted to help people. Well, of course, I also wanted to help myself. And, you know, as they say, there's no free lunch. Well, I think it's true, too, that people help because there's something in it for them, too. I'm not saying there's an ulterior motive, but there is a payoff. And generally, when we're helpful, we feel good about it. We think of help, generally, as being helpful. But one of the points that I want to make today is that help isn't necessarily helpful. And that it's important to know when it is and when it isn't. I'm thinking particularly of my home situation. For nearly a year, there have been house guests for extended periods. I'm talking about many months at a time. Now, I live in a cooperative arrangement. I own a home with two of my friends, and then we have another person who rents from us, and we have a very nice chosen family. It works out very well, and we all get along extremely well. And again, I believe in helping people. However, one of my friends, my housemates, wanting to help family members, decided that in order to get his niece out of a bad situation back in Pennsylvania, that it would really be good if she could come out to Minnesota and live with her uncle and aunt who live just a few blocks from us. She could do some babysitting, she could help around the house. It would get her away from the bad element that she was running with back in Pennsylvania. And so, without really consulting this 21-year-old a whole lot, a young woman that my friend had not seen in many years, actually, the arrangements were made, and she made that long bus ride from Lancaster, Pennsylvania to Minneapolis. He wanted to be helpful. Things didn't work out so well. Things weren't going as planned at the aunt and uncle's house, and in fact, there was a lot of conflict, so much so that it began to put a strain on their marriage. It put a strain on the relationship between them and our household. In fact, they weren't speaking to us for a while, and I think, in fact, they must have been to the same class that Dick Cheney went to. That was a rather unpleasant time. And then what happened, without a lot of discussion, the niece came to live with us in this open-ended arrangement. Now, she didn't have a job. She really didn't have many skills. She decided that she wanted to join the Navy, like her two uncles had done. Well, the problem was that one of her tattoos was visible on the side of her neck, and the Navy recruiter said, "No, you're not getting in the Navy until you get rid of the tattoo." Of course, the fact that she said, "Well, I'm not really a morning person," might have gotten in the way of the tattoo. Now, she's a good person, and I don't have anything against her, but I will tell you that it created a lot of tension having her come to live with us. And at one point, in exchanging emails with her uncle, when she first came to stay, I said, "You know, I really appreciate that you want to help your family members, but because of my own health issues, I need to really reduce the stress as much as I can. And the response I got back was, well, what could be stressful? It's just another person living in the house. Now, it makes more sense when you know that this person spent over 20 years in the military, and part of that time was in the submarine service. So he was pretty good at living with people in close quarters. Well, let me just tell you that it changed everything. That effort to be helpful not only had an impact on the helpee, it had a big impact on the helper and those of us who were around while it was happening. It was a very unhappy time for me. And when I got back from California last winter, things came to a head and I had quite a shouting match, which is unlike me, actually, with the uncle in question. And I said, you know, I think you really want to manage other people's lives, and you're doing the same thing to me. You seem to think you know better how I should deal with my health issues and other things. And, you know, I don't think you know better than I do, and I really resent it. Things were very tense, very uncomfortable. And we got through it, we got past it, and eventually the niece went back to Pennsylvania, only to be replaced by her mother. Now, once again, the concern was to help someone, and her mother is a very nice person, very hardworking, has skills, and is a morning person. And so she had no trouble getting a job, but her brother had worked on her for many months to get her to come and spend time with us because of an abusive marriage. A husband who was taking drugs and pretty messed up. So finally she came to stay with us. And once again, the stress level went up. Now, I am not an inhospitable person, and I do my best to make people feel welcome. But I want to tell you, if I were able to light the candle this morning, it would be for the joy of going home in 3 weeks to just our household. She's going home too. There is that old saying, you know, that no good deed goes unpunished. And what has come out of this, in the case of our family unit, is a closer examination of just how helpful help is, and a look at what one's motivation is in trying to help someone else. Now, the good news is that my friend, my housemate, my co-owner of this property, has really gotten some insight from the experience and recognizes not only some of the problems inherent in a situation like this, but also having a better understanding of his own tendency to want to control and make decisions to improve other people. Living through this experience brought to mind an article that I had read about 35 years ago when I was a student. It was by a California author, a fellow who died a few years ago named Jack R. Gibb. And he wrote an article entitled, Is Help Helpful? Well, as a young person, idealistic, planning to go on to become a helping professional, I was rather taken aback by his notion that help may not be helpful. Well, let me tell you, I see it very differently now. I can't tell you the number of times parents have talked to me, parents of adult children, who are wondering now whether they really should have let their children fail more growing up, because they keep moving back home when things don't work out. I don't know if there's anyone here who has experienced that. Of course, I hear that. Well, we want to help our children. We don't want our children to fail. Not that it reflects on us at all, but you know, it's like when the child is starting to walk and you're holding their little hands, you have to let them go. Of course, it's better if you don't let them go at the top of the stairs when they're starting to walk, but you have to take some risks. And I wonder sometimes just how much of this service we have done to our children when we don't let them fail, or at least fumble and flail around a bit, the way we did when our parents didn't help us. You know, back then when things were different. Well, how about you? How many of you have had the experience of trying to help someone and they didn't appreciate it? They resented it. They told you to go chainy yourself. I just made that up. I think we can get away with that here. Okay. And how about you? I mean, how many people here have asked for help in the last week? Anybody? Okay. And I'm especially impressed with the men who asked for help. I mean, a lot of men can't even ask for directions. You know, this is a big achievement. But I think, you know, sometimes we do feel very uncomfortable that somehow we're going to be perceived as weak or wanting in some way if we ask for help. Well, what I did recently through the miracle of the internet was to find the actual article that Jack R. Gibb wrote about 40 years ago. And what a difference. That article changed dramatically in those years. And I found myself going through it and going, yes, yes, well, I agree with that. He talks about how sometimes we help people and they become dependent. They become very dependent so that they can't function well at all. While other people, when they get some help, it seems to be something that propels them to become more resourceful and better able to care for themselves. Now, I am not here today to say we shouldn't help people. But I think there are some criteria we might keep in mind when we're contemplating it. Now, obviously, if there's an emergency, if somebody falls down in front of you, you might reasonably try to help them get up, or at least find out whether they want to get up. Gibb talks about things that hinder and help helping. He says one of the things that really helps if we're involved in helping is reciprocal trust. And something that doesn't help then would be distrust. And by trust, he's talking about having confidence, having a sense of acceptance and warmth, where you feel comfortable with the person who wants to help you. On the other hand, if you fear this person or you're defensive about it, probably not going to be so helpful. He also contrasts cooperative learning with teaching. Now, how many of us as parents or friends or helping professionals have seen it as our responsibility to teach other people? We need to teach them what to do and how to do it. And he argues that it is much more beneficial to both the helper and the helpee if there is a spirit of cooperative learning, and that is a kind of mutual inquiry, an exploration that's shared, not simply giving someone the answer, but assisting them in finding it. He also draws the distinction between mutual growth and evaluating. Now, how have you felt sometimes when someone wants to help you? Have you ever felt like maybe they're looking down at you a little bit? Like maybe you're not capable of doing it on your own? What does it do to your self-esteem if you have this feeling that they aren't really so concerned with your growth and mutual growth, and they're getting something out of it too, as with simply being critical and making you different? Some other things that he says are helpful in helping are reciprocal openness, shared problem solving, autonomy, that is, having freedom and equality and interdependence. And he also talks about experimentation. Not necessarily just having the answer, but looking at alternate possibilities in solving a problem and being helpful. And then on the other hand, things that get in the way are strategizing, which may mean that you come across as conniving, that you're being nice to them, but you really want something from it. And it's really more about you than about them. And similar to teaching, he cites modeling and coaching. And then finally, he talks about patterning, and that is that there is an assumption that there is a particular way to do it, and you better fit that model, fit that pattern. I think all of us, if we take time to reflect upon it, can recall ways in which we have been on the giving and receiving end of help and really haven't had a good experience of it. And I would ask you here now to think about a time when you helped someone and it was successful and it was appreciated and it didn't demean the other person. Okay? I remember an experience. I was probably about 12, you know, I was 12 years old, and walking with my parents on a street shopping area, and my mother went running across the street, and I'm wondering, you know, what is going on? And she went to grab this man. She saw this elderly man starting to fall. And so she went to try to keep him from falling. Well, not only did he fall and break his hip, unfortunately, my mother broke her arm. And my mother never complained about it. She never said, boy, I wish I hadn't done that. It just was the thing to do. She didn't question it. It was one of those emergencies, and she stepped in and did the best she could. And fortunately, it was a less litigious time, and she didn't get sued as a good Samaritan. But it certainly made an impression upon me. And one of the life-changing parts of all of this was that my mother couldn't iron. It was her ironing arm, and so I learned to iron. Now, that was both good news and bad news, because I don't think my mother ever ironed another thing for me after that. But I'm really good at ironing now. And I get great satisfaction. It's like coloring inside the lines. So if I'm dealing with stress and tension, I'll go iron something. Well, I'm glad so many of you have had positive experiences helping other people. But I would ask you, as you reflect on the topic, to think about how you have been affected or changed by the help that you attempted to give someone else. And then on the other hand, what about asking for help? I want to encourage you today, this week, to ask someone to help you. And one of the experiences I'm very familiar with is dealing with death and dying. being with a family when they've lost a loved one, and we prepare for the funeral or memorial service. And I generally will tell them, you know, people are going to ask you, is there anything they can do to help? And I always encourage people to ask for it, no matter how small a thing it is. Because we are a helping people. It is our nature. And we want to do that. And especially at a time like that, most of us feel pretty helpless. We don't know what to say or do. And sometimes we say or do nothing. We don't even show up. But I would encourage you this week to ask for some help and see what happens. See how you feel. See what the reaction is of the other person. Now, what a lot of this really comes down to is listening and paying attention and finding a way when we see that someone is having a struggle or that we perceive that they need some help, that we ask them how we might be helpful, if we can be helpful at all. Sometimes the answer is no. But in the case of my friend's sister-in-law, this is a woman who never, ever allowed anyone to help. And one of the big regrets when she died, the people around her wished that they had been able to do something for her. She always spent so much of her time caring for others that there was an imbalance in the relationship. So I ask you in this coming week to listen carefully and pay attention to those that might need some help, and to remember that people do things for their reasons and not ours, and that motivation varies widely. How can we be helpful on their terms in a way that doesn't diminish or demean them or elevate us in a way that makes the relationship more difficult in the long run? And may we also be more willing to ask for what we need. Now, in closing, I would hope that my remarks have been helpful. And what's in it for me is that I'm getting paid to be here today. I also take very seriously my responsibilities as a minister, as a helping person. And I hope that there's been something of value for you here today. And finally, I would tell you, to paraphrase President Cheney, go help yourself.